I'm Sarah Lipman. Welcome to Torat Imecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. Today we will be learning Sefer Mishlei, Proverbs, chapter 19. In this chapter, the word rush, impoverished person, appears three times. That's six times more frequently than it appears throughout Mishlei, and 166 times more frequently than it appears through Tanakh. It's also interestingly paired with the word kazav, deceit, or promise-breaking, so we'll check into the relationship between those two words as we go along. With respect to other words that appear frequently in this chapter, I would refer you to chapter 12, where we learned about tov, good, chapter 13, where we learned about nefesh, soul, and chapter 17, where we learned about kasil, fool. As always, unless stated otherwise, our analysis is based on teachings from Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch. There are other words for a person who doesn't have a lot of money. Ani, for example, a poor person, or dal, also a poor person. What distinguishes the rush, the poor person, from these other forms of poverty? We know that the Torah is very specific and precise in how it uses words. Let's start with the first presentation of the word rush. It may not be what you expect. In the 15th chapter of Bereishis, Avram says to God, Hein li lo nasata zara. Behold, you have not given me any children. Vehine ben vesi, yoreshosi. So the son of my house will inherit me. The son of my house, meaning someone who lives in his home, but isn't actually his child. Yoreshosi will inherit me. Yoresh is related to the word rash, poor. Why would inheriting have to do with poverty? This conjugation helps us understand the specific aspect of poverty described by the word rash. Rush means dispossessed or impoverished, meaning someone who has had and that has been taken from them. When somebody inherits property, of course, they're taking it from the ownership of the person before them. Although in that case, hopefully, it wasn't any stealing involved. That too sheds some light on the attitude of the rush, the impoverished person. It's not so much that they've been stolen from. They may have been, they may not have been. It's the feeling that they've been dispossessed, the feeling that something has been taken from them, perhaps that life has taken from them what they expected or what they had coming to them. In order to get some deeper insight into the mindset that is described by rush, impoverishment, let's take a look at how it's used in this chapter of Mishlei. Verse 1, Tov rash holech besumo, me'ikesh sfasav v'hu chesil. Better a poor person or an impoverished person who walks in innocence than one whose lips are crooked and he is a narrow-minded fool. Shlomo HaMelech is addressing himself directly to the person who feels impoverished, who's feeling, life isn't fair. I should have had more. He's telling him, it's a lot better to think you should have had more and not have it than to be the kind of person who gets what he has in a crooked way. Verse 7. Kolache rash seneuhu, avki mireyehu rachaku mimenu. All the brothers of a poor person, of an impoverished person, hate him. He's even shunned by his friends. Meradef amarim lohema. He pursues words, but they're of no avail. Sadly, it's not uncommon for wealthier relatives to ignore friends or relatives who are no longer in their same social class. They don't want to acknowledge them. They don't want to speak to them in public. They see them as an embarrassment. Verse 22, Ta'avas adam chasto, v'tov rash me'ish kazav. A person's longing is for kindness that's been promised to him, but an impoverished person is better than a deceptive one. In contrast to the impoverished person, the book of Mishlei brings the liar, the kazav. Now that seems like an interesting contrast. I would think that an impoverished person might be contrasted more with a wealthy person. Let's take a look at the word kazav and try and understand what one thing has to do with another. Why would I be saying better to feel impoverished than to be a liar? Verse 5. Eid shekarim lo yinakeh, v'yafiach kazavim lo yimaleit. A false witness will not be exonerated, and a spouter of lies will not escape censure. Verse 8. Eid shekarim lo yinakeh, v'yafiach kazavim yoved. No, I didn't actually read the same verse twice. This verse is almost identical to the one we just read. A false witness will not be exonerated, and a spatter of lies will be destroyed. And in verse 22, which we read previously, Ta'avas adam chasto, a person's longing is for kindness promised to him. V'tov rash me'ish kazav, better an impoverished person than a deceptive one. And this verse gives us some of the deepest insight because we see the contrast to Avas Adam Chasto. People crave what they believe has been promised to them by life, by God, by the people around them. It's better to be the person who's impoverished, who feels that they have been maybe even cheated, than to be the cheater, to be the kazav, the person who promised and didn't fulfill. So what's the difference between a kazav and a person who's just a shakran, a liar? Someone who says a sheker, a lie, is saying something which is just straight out false. It's false, it's misleading, it's untrue. Someone who says a kazav is more of a betrayal, because what they're saying is true or could be true, but they're not going to keep the promise. They're not going to fulfill it down the line. The kazav, the person who is a liar in this way, is flippant. He embroiders his truth, he embroiders his stories, he builds up his promises, and in doing so, shatters people's hearts, breaks their hopes, breaks their dreams. He's really careless with the feelings of the people around him. It's a lot better to be the victim than the aggressor when it comes to shattered hopes. But still, we can be in a better place than feeling like a victim. In all these cases, Shlomo HaMelech is reminding a person who perhaps is down on his luck or feels that he has less than he used to have or should have had. Guess what? That feeling of impoverishment, you own that and you have control over it and you can change it. You can realize life is not about how much you had or how much you expected to have. Life is about how much you are and who you make of yourself. Let's look at this a little more deeply. Both the wealthy person and the poor person are assessing someone's value according to the importance of material possessions. A rich person sees his own wealth as some kind of fortress. He doesn't have to worry about anything because, worst case, he'll spend some money on it. And the poor person sees it exactly the same way. He says, okay, I have no part in that citadel of wealth. I'm afraid I'll be torn apart. I'm more at risk. I'm more vulnerable. He feels not only poor, but impoverished, made poorer by the fact that other people have. And the wealthy person feels richer because other people have less. Neither of them takes into consideration that one's true value lies not in the sum of his possessions, but in how he got them and how he uses them. A person forgets that more valuable than the money is his good name, is his kind nature, who he is, and what he does with what he has, not the stuff he's got. Now, this all sounds warm and fuzzy, right? You are who you make of yourself. You're not described by your money. It's the sort of thing we say to somebody who doesn't have. And we don't say it to somebody who does have because they don't need it, right? They know they're fine. But let me tell you, it's the absolute truth. Somebody who feels like they have less loses faith in their inherent dignity as a human being. But really, there's no degree of poverty. There's only yourself that can hurt your dignity. And to someone who feels rich, it never occurs to them that the poor person might actually be better than him, morally, spiritually, reliably. He assumes that since his business is doing better, he is better. Defining yourself by material wealth is a recipe for unhappiness and internal personal disaster. And meantime, we're in a vicious cycle. The wealthy deluding the poor deluding the wealthy, the humiliation of the poor increasing the arrogance of the rich, lowering the self-respect of the poor. But is it not true that the wealth of a rich man often is the very evidence of his weakness? And the poverty of a poor person, his lack, might well testify to his moral strength. Somehow we forget it. We look at the surface and we assume that money is a gauge of the person. And worse, just when we should be deciding who to hire, who to marry, who to spend time with, based upon character and spiritual worth, how often do we fall back on just looking at the money, looking at the fame and the influence? Society around us only amplifies this error. Ki somar Edom rushashnu, says the prophet Malachi. Even if Edom will say, we are shattered, rushashnu, we are impoverished, we're broken. Venashuv venivnecha ravos, but we'll come back, we'll rebuild the ruins. Says God, they may build it up, I'll tear it down. Your eyes will see it, and you will proclaim that the love of God shows himself great. There is a principle, there is a guiding value of the society of Edom, and that is the worship of force. The great men of history are the ones who plan to conquer the world and do their best to make it happen. With them, the care and development of material, spiritual, moral forces, the wealth of man, it all is in the service of this ideal: force, power, success, fame. The bigger, the better. But this Edom principle is in complete contrast to the true divine order of the world. It's false. It's not the reality. In truth, we're here to elevate ourselves. The rule of the justice and the right and the love is standing on that foundation. That's our prime directive. The mighty kingdoms of Edom, they build their armies, they build their skyscrapers, they build their wealth. They look like they are going to stand forever. They can't possibly be toppled. But God says, I hate it. I'll lay it waste. They can try and build. I can throw it down. If you're looking for power, look to God. Don't look to wealth. Don't look to might. Don't look to force and strength. God hates that attitude of might makes right. He hates the adoration and worship of force that breaks the back of those it conquers. What a contrast between the mighty empires, each of which seemed unconquerable in its day. One by one, they've fallen down, and it's the Jewish people, scattered and powerless, who live on to witness that and proclaim that it is the power of God that shows itself. It's His almighty strength and His almighty love for the Jewish people and the values they teach to their children and to the world. Taking this all into consideration, let's take a moment to think about a healthy mindset where we can feel strong no matter where we are and what happens to us. What if, instead of thinking about how much more I want to have, I thought about how much I do have? How can I contribute with it? How can I give blessing instead of how can I receive blessing? What if I realized that everything in my life, the forces of nature, the workings of history, the highlights, the pleasures, and the sorrows of my personal life, everything that God has allowed me and everything that He has denied me, what if I thought of them all as my blessing, supporting my mission in life, giving me strength, giving me resolve, helping me to fulfill it? My God, it is my deepest desire to make You proud of me, to shine Your blessing into the world. That's the real blessing I pray for. When I can put myself in that mindset, then whether I have a lot or a little is immaterial. The measure of my success is the measure to which I fulfill God's blessing to Abraham. Wealth, need, entitlement, let it go. Rise above it. V'heye bracha. Become a blessing. Thank you for studying together with me. Le'ilui Nishmas, Malka Esther, Bas Tzvi Yosef.